This is Charlottesville Tomorrow. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit organization engaging the public on critical quality of life issues so we make informed choices for our community's future. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org. On November 3, 2015, voters in the city of Charlottesville go to the polls to elect their representatives to 3 seats on the Charlottesville City Council. This recording is Brian Wheeler's August 28, 2015 interview with Democrat Mike Signer. Other candidates in this race include Independent Scott Bandy, Democrat Wes Bellamy, incumbent Democrat Kathy Galvin, and Republican Anson Parker. Mr. Signer, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio recording and written transcript for this interview will be available online. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of the Nonpartisan Voter Guide, being co-produced by Charlottesville Tomorrow, The Daily Progress, and the League of Women Voters. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues primarily related to land use, transportation, public education, and community design. As you are aware, the first 2 questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. For the others, you have been provided only the topic in advance. All City Council candidates will be asked the same questions. We ask that you keep these questions confidential until all candidates have been interviewed. Each candidate will be provided an opportunity to review the excerpts selected for the voter guide before its publication. Are you ready to start?
I am.
Question number 1. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on Charlottesville City Council.
I want to thank Charlottesville Tomorrow for the opportunity to do this and for the service that you guys provide to the community. I grew up in Virginia, and I'm a graduate of Virginia Public Schools. That's one qualification I think that will help me on the city council. And those schools were majority-minority in Arlington, so that's an important part of my upbringing and values. I am a practicing attorney, a graduate of the University of Virginia. One of my first jobs out of college was working as legislative aide to then Delegate Cree Deed, so I have familiarity with how the General Assembly works in Virginia. I later worked as counsel to Mark Warner when he was governor, so I have further experience in how that office works in Virginia, especially vis-a-vis localities. I later served as senior strategist to Tom Perriello, who represented Charlottesville in Congress. So those are several different levels of experience. But I also, probably the most valuable experience is at the local level here in Charlottesville. I run a small business, a law firm called Madison Law and Strategy Group that works with local startups, outside general counsel to small businesses here. I was the chairman of the Democratic Coordinated City Council race in 2013. So I came to know a great deal about both the policy and politics around city council in the city. I'm the president of the Fifeville Neighborhood Association, which is where I live. I'm the chairman of the Emergency Food Network here in town, which provides a vital service for our most needy families in Charlottesville and Albemarle. And I've also been a voting rights attorney for over a decade, helping many people in Virginia and in this region make sure that they have the right to vote.
Question number 2. What is your top priority for action by the City Council if you are elected?
The overarching reason that I ran for City Council was the theme of my campaign, and is something that will be a touchstone of mine on council, which was One Charlottesville. That idea to me is about building bridges between the different neighborhoods and different communities and different groups in our city, and really putting, wherever possible, the common good of the city foremost when I make decisions, when I try to talk to other stakeholders and leaders in the community. That meant to me 4 areas, 4 priorities. So the first one was increasing economic opportunity in the city. The second one was increasing quality of life, particularly in our neighborhoods and particularly with the natural environment in Charlottesville. The third one was making sure that our public safety policies are really cutting edge. And the fourth one was standing by our public schools, which are our biggest budgetary commitment. So I'm really going to be trying to drive on four priorities, four fronts on council. But I would have to say, setting all of those aside, a very specific priority is to come to a resolution on the Landmark Hotel, which is right in my front yard, and it's also right in the front yard of where I work. My business is on South Street, and I think that it's just a shame that it has lingered on so long, and I think that we're approaching a real opportunity where we can come to a resolution within the first year after I'm on council, I hope.
Question number three. What steps should council and the school board take to help build a more sustainable school budget?
I have reviewed the Blue Ribbon Commission report, which is a very valuable and important document with some very bright people who care deeply about this commitment of our budget. And our public schools are, again, they're the biggest item in the Charlottesville budget. So the challenge of funding them sustainably is as many people know, a long-term one. The schools, the state's contribution, the school budget locally dropped by some measures about a third, and that happened to localities around Virginia. It looks like it may be increased somewhat, hopefully, under the present governor. That's some recent news. But we still have to do work to come up with a sustainable solution. One of the recommendations of the commission that was affected was a small increase in the meals tax, still very controversial. There were some other components that were not touched the last time around. They include looking at our property tax assessments and looking at a lodging tax. I think that we ought to, everything ought to be on the table that's reasonable and that is evidence-based and that that was examined by this Blue Ribbon Commission. The budgetary process is very complicated, as everyone knows, and you want an empathetic and smart approach to it. The one thing that was not examined by the Blue Ribbon Commission was efficiencies, and that is, and they said that it was extremely important to look at. They just didn't have the bandwidth to do it. So I think it's important that we put into place a process, and I'm having conversations with people right now, maybe about a Blue Ribbon Commission on efficiencies that would be similarly constructed with experts in our community that could take an even-handed approach toward where are there savings that would not hurt that would not hurt our schools, maybe even would help them, and that could have the support of the kind of leaders that are on a Blue Ribbon Commission. And so I think we need to look at both sides of the ledger, at expenses and at savings.
Question number four. Business leaders and social service agencies have told local government that new investments are sorely needed in the area of early childhood education. Will you make pre-K education and quality child care a priority, and if so, how?
Yes, I will make it a priority. I think the evidence is in about how absolutely crucial those first years are in the development, particularly of low-income and more vulnerable kids, particularly those who might have not have the most stable home environments. And so education programs, especially where they, ranging from motor skills to having their vocabulary increased, to being read to being cared for. They provide just such an important leg up. So I think the Charlottesville Tomorrow has done really good work, actually, in the community on this. You all have done some interesting reports about innovative programs around Virginia and also around the country. There was something about social impact bonds you all did about ways of funding these programs, because it can be a slightly different income stream, because you have there's Head Start monies, there's a lot of nonprofit monies. It's off of the traditional K through 12 brief of a standard school board. So I want to be heavily involved in this. I want to be active on it, working with my other counselors, working with leaders in the community. We have amazing resources in Charlottesville. We have the Curry School of Education. We have a lot of private sector folks here who might be willing to support greater child education. We have nonprofits, and it is something that I'm going to support.
Question number five. Each growth area in Albemarle County has a community advisory committee appointed by the Board of Supervisors, which provides input on program and policy decisions, including the implementation of the comprehensive plan. In what ways would you like to see city government engage neighborhoods to ensure a diversity of voices is involved in the implementation of the city's small area plans?
Well, I was very interested to see this question, which I just saw for the first time, because I'm going to bring an unusual experience set to the city council as the head of a neighborhood association. And at our most recent meeting, there was a very vigorous discussion about some development decisions. And as a result of that, a committee of citizens in Fifield developed, and we're having our first meeting next week, about doing a small area plan on Cherry Avenue. And there were about 10 people who seem so far interested. There will probably be more in working with the city and with neighborhood development services and planning and economic development on providing a vision of what Cherry Avenue could be that would reflect what residents there want. What kind of retail, what kind of residential, what kind of nature, what kind of feel to the streets. So this is, I can't speak to what the result of it is going to be, but it's ongoing. In general, I think that this really has to do with NDS and the Neighbor Development Services. And we have a new director coming in, so there's a whole new page being turned there, which will be really interesting. There's staff there. A lot of the rubber hitting the road is with neighborhoods' interaction with particular staff members at NDS. And one idea that I've had is that we should have a transparent tracking system where any request that goes into NES is assigned a number and it can be tracked. The fancy, $5 vocabulary word would be longitudinally. So you'd track it over time. You could see which staff members have worked on that request, where it ended up. Right now we don't have that. And I think that all measures that increase responsiveness, transparency, when neighborhoods are dealing with the city will be to the good for both city staff and for the neighborhood, so everybody knows what's happening.
Question number six. Describe a part of local government that would benefit from increased cooperation by the city, county, and or the University of Virginia, and that you would make a priority.
Economic development. So regionalism almost always is better than different localities operating in isolation. That's been the experience across the country and across Virginia. So generally, when you have neighboring localities work together on something that affects both of them, it improves results. You could apply that logic to environmental decisions, which cross boundaries, to education, to planning, to transportation. So it's a big question. I'm interested in economic development because significant employers that could come to town are likely going to benefit both Charlottesville and Albemarle. We are hand in glove. We're very tight neighbors. We should be cooperating and we should be collaborating. A lot of people in this region cross that boundary multiple times in a given week. And that's part of the nature of our community. So when we're looking at employers who could bring good significant numbers of jobs to this region, they are likely to contribute to both Charlottesville and Albemarle. And I think that we'll be better off talking a lot more, strategizing together, trying to figure out how to add as much leverage from both communities to that potential employer that could come in, at least not being surprised by what the other party is doing.
Question number seven. What role should city council play in decisions about good urban design and placemaking?
Well, in my campaign, I talked a lot about the model that I see city council playing in the way that our government is designed. And maybe this is my experience as a corporate attorney, but I see city council as like the board of directors for the city. It's a part-time position with policy making and vision setting. That's its charter. You have a full-time government. You have a CEO effectively in the city manager. That's how that's set up. So I see city council as setting the vision for the city. So in that essence, it's extremely important for placemaking, especially when you it's got more power and more authority under the Code of Virginia than the Planning Commission. City Council does ultimately effect the planning vision for the city. And even more important than that, planning and placemaking decisions a lot of the time have a very long runway. So a lot of the decisions now that are happening on West Main Street are the result of zoning code decisions that were made 10 years ago. So when I read the comprehensive plan recently, it talks extensively about how we haven't really had a comprehensive code update for the city. Zoning codes are so, they're nerdy and they're difficult and it's a little bit obscure for regular people to understand, but they are vastly important, folks, to get the stuff right, especially because people are making, 10-year-long decisions to put together the financing and the plans for new buildings. And so I think it's very important. City Council's job is to both take in the best ideas from the community and from experts and from the neighborhoods and from stakeholders, but also to lead on these placemaking decisions. What kind of city do we want in 10, 25, 50 years? What do we want to feel like? And so I see it as very important.
Question number 8, what is your top transportation priority and how will it be funded?
Well, I'm going to divide this into two, actually. I think that number one is that we need to continue to make sure that our transportation decisions decrease our reliance on individual automobiles and increase a variety of other kinds of transportation, from bikes to public transit. That's good for the city. It's good for reducing congestion. It's good for getting people on the street and interacting with each other. It's good for a healthy street feel in the city. The second part of this is I think we need to make sure that our transportation policies help low-income people. There are horrifying stories in the city of people who are stringing together two or three part-time jobs and who don't have cars. So what they have to do to get from, where they live in whatever region of the city to their two part-time jobs is harrowing to think about. And they have to do it every day. So you have hour-long commutes in our 10 square mile city, sometimes going into the county. So I think we need to be very attentive to the challenges faced by those folks. And it may be that there are very creative, innovation-driven ideas. I was joking at one of the earlier campaign events that it might sound futuristic, and I don't want to be, we're on the record here, but I just would urge people to think about there could be real developments that the so-called driverless car movement is going to bring to cities like Charlottesville. You're seeing this around the country. Virginia, Governor McAuliffe is trying to put Virginia ahead of the curve on driverless cars. If you work out the regulatory and the insurance issues, think about what it's like when you, when you've taken an airport shuttle and the shuttle picks up 12 people before it goes to the airport and you have a rough time about when you're going to be picked up. That process could be made vastly more efficient, maybe for low-income people. So you'd actually be able to get to where you need to go in a fraction of the amount of time and with less expense to the locality. Who knows? This is it does sound futuristic, I recognize. I don't mean to I want to be careful with the ideas that I'm exploring, but there may be creative innovations out there that really could help crack a problem that's been very difficult to help so far, which is how do you use big, huge buses where a lot of capacity is wasted to help somebody who doesn't have a car get to where they need to go.
And did you want to address the funding challenge?
Thank you for asking that follow-up. I look at funding challenges for transportation like I look at every funding challenge for every request in the city. We have to balance it against all others. So transportation funding is a valid, valuable part of our public policy, but I don't want to make, I'm not making individual commitments about individual budget requests.
Question number 9, what areas of the current comprehensive plan will you concentrate on for implementation, improvement, and or monitoring?
Well, I spoke about one already, which is continuing to make sure that the zoning code is complete and shapes the community we want to have over the generations. But there was one other specific area that I talked about in my campaign, which we just because we were there this weekend, I'm thinking about it. The Ravana River really is this jewel within our borders, and there could be more that we could do to make it a so-called ecotourism destination, where people are using it much more actively and tubing on it and rafting on it, and where improvements are developed probably with mostly private sector and nonprofit partners to continue to make it a real heart of our community in a planned way. So you'd be looking a generation down, and people in 25 years would say, wow, that's really a reason that I love being in Charlottesville. I love using that river, and I love going there in a way that does not happen as much now. So that's one part of the plan that I think would be worth paying attention to.
Question number 10. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment, and what type of jobs will be your priority?
I think the most urgent part of our economic opportunity menu is jobs for people without college degrees in the city. We have a persistent economic challenge in the city, which is those folks who had trouble in high school and definitely with college. It can be a really difficult trap to get out of. However, if we could bring in significant blocks of jobs for those folks and possibly link them up with a training program that could be offered at KTEC or PVCC. And this is one of the things I'm very eager to do on council, is to negotiate these sorts of deals competitively with employers who are eyeing our locality but also eyeing other ones. So if we could bring in an employer, you know, hypothetically imagine a call center or quality testing software. These are ideas that have been presented to me, and they could create, you know, in the high dozens or hundreds of jobs for those kinds of folks here in our community. Good jobs with benefits. You need a little bit of training. Don't need a college degree. I think that would be a great victory. And that could only happen me working with our great economic development office and with a lot of other. But I think that one of the things I can do is try and bring private sector experience and some negotiating skill and leadership to that kind of goal. But it will take a while.
Question number 11. Do you support the redevelopment of Charlottesville's public housing sites to create vibrant mixed income and mixed use neighborhoods without displacement of existing residents?
Well, I support the redevelopment of our public housing sites. The experience from around the country, and I have family members who have been involved in this in other cities, is that redevelopment works best when it's done with two things: maximum buy-in of the community, where you really, and this is what we've learned over the years with the various mistakes in Vinegar Hill, which continues to kind of haunt us, and so maximum buy-in from the community, and then the second thing is phasing. So the question is a little bit misleading, because displacement is a very charged word. I think that you don't want anybody to feel displaced. That is the whole goal of redevelopment would be to not have that word be part of the picture. So, and as you know, the city is looking toward a very successful redevelopment that happened in Alexandria, Virginia, for models, possibly for advisory services right now. And so we want to look to the best and most successful programs that have happened around Virginia, around the country, to make sure that we don't ever get to that place.
Mike Signer, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.